Welcome to another episode of the Postcast. On today's episode, I got my main man. I got three-time champion, Mr. Dade County, Mr. 305, Heat lifer, Miami Heat's all-time leading rebounder, my main man, Udonis Haslem in the building. What up, UD?
Shout out, man, Pose, for letting me get a couple of them rebounds. Let me get a couple of them. I know you get out the way and let your boy grab a couple of them things. Appreciate you.
We're going to talk about you stealing my rebounds, you know
what I'm saying? No, listen, I see how I just said you got out the way and gave it to me, dog. Like, we ain't even got to bring that up. Now we ain't even got to talk about that.
What's good, man? I appreciate you taking the time out, man. I know, you've been busy and everything, but blessing me with your presence once again, you know. I appreciate it.
No, man, you already know what it is, bro.
All right, man. So, look, tell me a little bit about growing up in that 305, like the real Dade County. And you know how the people say it's different when you cross that bridge. Tell me a little bit about that.
I mean, everybody, like, you know what I'm saying? I think people get it confused when they look at, you know what I'm saying, TV. And they see the glitz and glamour of Miami. You know what I'm saying? And they think that, that's Miami. You know what I'm saying? But real Miamians, people that's born and raised here, they consider that Miami Beach. And they consider the other side of the bridge where we from, Miami. You know what I'm saying? Miami Beach, keep their tax money on Miami Beach. Everything that happens on Miami Beach, stay on Miami Beach. It ain't getting shared with none of these people across the bridge. And that's respect. But I grew up going to Hollywood Beach. I never been to South Beach until I got in the NBA.
You got to the NBA, that's the first time you crossed that bridge?
Yeah, bro. Never been over there until I got in the league, man. Like, growing up in Miami, you only know what you're around every day. You know what I'm saying? Just right. Like, where you from? You know what I'm saying? You see what you're around every day, and you become comfortable in your surroundings, whether they're good or bad. That's what you're comfortable in. You know what I'm saying? So, for me, I was just comfortable in my friends and my atmosphere every day. Obviously, you know what I'm saying? You got the dope boys. You got all this going on. You got sports. You got athletics. You know where to go. You know where not to go. You got friends that go to jail. You got friends that get killed. I mean, you understand all that.
So where does your toughness come from? And when I say your toughness, it ain't just the physical, but it's the mental toughness of just to survive and make it, you know, as far as you made it right now.
I mean, being challenged early, you know what I'm saying? Obviously, growing up, you know what I'm saying? My mom and my pops wasn't together. So I was pretty much really raised with my stepmom and a lot of, you know, different, you know, like, you know, take a village, like they say, you know what I'm saying? So I had a lot of different influences, you know what I'm saying? So I lost my mom early, obviously, drug addiction, you know, homelessness, you know, a lot of different things that she had to go through. And I would say that she was probably the person who I got my mental toughness from, you know what I'm saying? To go through what she went through and to come back and to be somebody who can be a mentor and who can be like an example for the women that came from where she came from and got back to where she got back to. She was able to set an example for those women before she passed. So, you know, for me, she's always been my example and my inspiration, because that's real life. It's just basketball. It's just, you know, it's just a sport that we play in. You know what I'm saying? She came back from the drug addiction, the homelessness, you know what I'm saying? Where we from, we already know people don't come back from the streets. So for her to come back and not just come back, but to set an example and to be a leader after all that, you know what I'm saying? My mom, I think, knows where it came from.
Tell me about this Miami High now. I mean, y'all got some, you know, got yourself, you got some other NBA ballers that came through there, but this Miami High is special. I mean, everybody talk about it, you know, the winning tradition. Frank Martin at the time, I think, you know what I'm saying? You know, his role and impact he had on your life at an early age. And then just like I said, this Miami High.
Why you throw your hands up like that when you said it? Like you got a problem. Like what?
Because I want you to let everybody know you about got, Miami High, because that's what you hear about. And y'all had all these, you know, NBA, you know, players coming through it. It got to be something special about it, and especially, you know, okay, like I said, that's all.
Man, you know what, man? The high was the first time I was ever challenged, bro. Like, before I got to Miami High, basketball was easy for me. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, with us being taller, you know what I'm saying? Sometimes we're more naturally gifted, sometimes we're not. But just because we're bigger, we're able to get away with bad habits playing the game early. So Miami High was the first time I got challenged, man. Frank was on me. I mean, too much whom is given, much is required, man. I've been given size. I have been given a soft touch, you know, good hands, good feet, all that stuff, man. But I just didn't work hard. You know what I'm saying? So Frank was the first coach to actually challenge me and push me. There was a standard, you know what I'm saying, set by the guys that came before me. Before I even walked in there, there was banners already hanging up. You know what I'm saying? So you already knew what you was walking into. And the thing that was different about Miami High was the guys that played there, that put them banners in there, You know what I'm saying? If their careers went to the pros or whatever the situation may be, they was always back in that gym every summer. You know what I'm saying? And they saw us playing. They saw us working out. They was playing with us. They was working out. They was kicking our butts. And at the same time, like, if we lose a game, you will hear about it. Like, you will hear about it from the uppers. Like, yo, like, we ain't lose. We was 36-0. We was 40-0. Like, ah, damn, y'all out here blowing the money. Like, you know, it was that kind of talk. You know what I'm saying? So, right. Like, when we lose, it was pressure. Not like bad pressure. You know what I'm saying? Pressure to uphold a standard. You feel me? Like, to be accountable out here. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So where did your love of the game come from? Did it start then, or was it before that, where you knew, like, this was basketball was what I wanted to do?
I think that's when I realized that's what I wanted to do, because that's the first time it became uncomfortable. You know what I'm saying? That's the first time, like, basketball became uncomfortable.
Say that again.
First time it became uncomfortable. You feel me?
Yeah.
That was the first time that shit became uncomfortable. And I was like, man, I don't know if I want to do it. I don't know if I want to do this, man. I'm throwing up. Right. He got me running and shit. Like, damn, what the fuck? It's not supposed to be like this. I'm good. Like, you feel me? So that was the first time basketball had became uncomfortable for me. And I really, no bullshit, bro. I had to decide, like, yo, if I really feel like dealing with all this, like, it's a lot. You feel me?
Right.
And I made the decision to stick with it. You know what I mean? And Frank, you know, God, I mean, thank God for Frank, man. You know what I'm saying? Not just basketball wise, but for life wise. Like, everybody ain't make it. You know what I'm saying? I was fortunate enough to make it, but for the ones that ain't make it, man, he was still a father figure and a vessel to help them get, you know what I'm saying, improve their circumstances in life. You know what I'm saying? Period. You know what I'm saying? Wherever they at, you know what I'm saying? Everybody could say at some point it was because of Frank Martin. I promise you that.
So growing up in Miami, you end up going to Florida, the University of Florida. How did you end up there, and what happened to the University of Miami?
They recruited me, you know what I'm saying? But I was a kid that understood, you know, who I was. I was very self-aware early. You know what I'm saying? What kind of situations I thrived in, what kind of situations I didn't thrive in. You know what I'm saying? So I already knew, being around my homeboys while I was trying to go to college and play ball and be at practice in the morning. And yeah, you can hang out tonight. You'll be straight for practice in the morning. Nah, dog. It might work one night, but then it's like, you know what I'm saying? It's starting to add up. You know what I'm saying? They ain't got to be accountable, held accountable like me. You know what I'm saying? So I knew I needed to get away, but I wasn't trying to go nowhere cold. I ain't want to go nowhere cold. I never seen snow. I ain't want to be freezing and shit. So I said Gainesville.
Snow ain't that bad, man. It just make you tougher, man. You know, Cleveland, man.
At our age, that shit make your knees hurt.
Like, right.
At our age, you want to stay in bed now when it's snowing outside, man. But I said Gainesville, man. Billy Donovan was an up and coming, you know, a coach. You know what I'm saying? My best friend, Brent Wright, that went to high school with me at Miami High, had signed to go to the University of Florida before me. And then the recruiting class that was coming in, Mike Miller, you know, Ted DuPay, Donnell Harvey, we just had a hell of a recruiting class. I'm sorry, Donnell Harvey came in next year after me. My recruiting class was Mike Miller, Ted DuPay, and Ladarius Horton. And, you know, it was a great recruiting class. So it was an opportunity to start something, because at that time, the legacy of Florida basketball wasn't that great. You know what I'm saying? So it was an opportunity to start something.
So y'all had, you know, you had a great 4 years there, you know what I'm saying, did your thing there. At what point in your college career did you say, you know what, the NBA, you know, is where I want to play it? Or it was, you know, man, that's what you're trying to work towards?
You know the crazy thing about it, man, Pose, like, I tell like, people had those stories, and I get it. That might have been your story. I people had those stories of like, oh, I knew I was going to be in the NBA. I always knew it. Oh, I drove by that house on the block and I seen that house and I said one day I'm gonna buy that house. Okay, cool. That might have been your story. That wasn't my story. I ain't know I was gonna make it. I just was taking this shit day by day, bro. Like, I'm good at it. I like doing it. Let's see how far we can go with it. Let's see what we can do. You feel me? And like, that's just what it was. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't until about my junior year, you know what I'm saying, that I realized the NBA was a reality, you know, for me, you know, at that time. And I probably could have, and I had opportunity to leave my junior year, and maybe people say I should have, but I don't change my path, and I don't change for 4 years that I stayed, and the lessons that I learned from not being drafted to where I am now.
Sort of the same boat. Like, for me, like I said, sports period in itself, which is an opportunity for me to get out, you know what I'm saying? Graduating high school was big for me, and then even going to college. So it was like, yo, I'm just taking advantage of all these different little opportunities. And then with the, you know, you say the notoriety of just the game and the sport, you know, I just try to get better because I was competitive and therefore I'm trying to beat the next man. And then they say, you know, I go off to college and stuff like that. And like you said, I was just taking it one day at a time too. And my family, we weren't banking on it. We ain't really know guys that played in the pros no way. So we like, shit, like we weren't expecting it. So like I said, I agree with you. It was more so.
Everything like was a phase. Everything was a phase, dog. Like, it's like, okay, now I'm here. Okay, let's see what's up. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And you just keep, right. Yeah. And you get in the first practice. You like, oh, you mother, I could do something here. Hey, I got something. okay.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And then you just keep going. You know what I mean? Like, I never had those hoop dreams. And shout out to those people that did, but I just didn't, man. For me, it was just survival. Every day was a different day. Let's see what we could do today.
Right. So was it one game you was like, damn, maybe my stat line was like, shit, this league material, or it was still like, nah, it's still part of the process too. And then were you looking at any NBA players like, yo, you know what? Shit, I could play if he could do that. You know how that talk goes. Oh, he could do that? Oh, I know I could play in the league. Did you have those, you know, those conversations or those thoughts?
I mean, my freshman year, I made all freshman team SEC. But, you know, my game that I think I really people really got to know me was we played Duke at Cameron.
Okay.
Elton Brand obviously was All American, and Duke had All American classes. And Dick Vitale did that game, and I gave and shout out to EB, man. He's great for what he's doing now. He had a great career. He's great in Philly, but I gave EB that work. I gave EB that work on ESPN as a freshman. You know what I'm saying? And Cameron.
Right. You know right.
And from that, you know, that's a tough environment to play in. You know what I'm saying? I wasn't rattled at all. I was ready. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, from that point on, you know, the notoriety, you know, just kind of started to spread because obviously the reputation that he had, you know what I'm saying? EB was cold. You know what I'm saying? Coming out of high school. And even then, when he came into the league, we talking about a guy who was 20-10 guy for a while. So, you know what I'm saying? As a freshman, you know what I'm saying? Having some success against him and giving him that work on ESPN with Dick Vitale screaming your name. You know what that do for you back then.
Oh,
everybody
yeah.
Everybody went ahead and Dickie V say their name, man. Everybody
exactly right. Everybody
say their name, man.
You Dickie V say your name. It's like, you arrived. You arrived. You special.
Stamp, dog. You stamp.
Right. So now your 4 years is coming to an end, and now it's almost like, you know, what are your options? And like I said, you know, being highly recruited, then going there and then not being talked as much as far as, you know, going to the NBA. So now it's a decision to be made. What was your next decision and how did you end up coming to that decision?
I mean, for me, you know what I'm saying? I remember, I remember leaving school like about a month. Well, I left school right before the last semester. You know what I'm saying? So I went to Orlando. I worked out with Mike Miller. I stayed with Mike Miller for like a month, 2 months. I worked out in Orlando. And then from there, you know, I went to California. You know what I'm saying? I've never been on my own. You know what I'm saying? So now I'm out here in Cali. It's a whole different, you know what I mean? That's a whole different ballgame. I'm like, man, what the hell? Where the regular people at? Everybody wants to.
There's sunshine out
wanna,
there, huh?
Everybody a movie star. What the hell is going on?
Right.
I just want to be around some regular people and do regular stuff, bro. And it just seemed like everything in Cali was not that. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I didn't have, like, nothing, like, but basketball. You know what I'm saying? And I just tapped into basketball, and I had a couple good workouts. But I remember sitting down with Coach Donovan, you know what I'm saying, in Atlanta, you know, after I had just, you know, had practice in Atlanta with the Hawks. The Hawks was the first team that brought me to camp. I actually had a great camp and played well in the summer league, but the Hawks was the first team that brought me to camp. And I remember talking to Billy, and Billy saying that, you know, teams just, you know, it just, for whatever reason, you know, it just wasn't a high interest. You know what I'm saying? And I remember having a conversation with Coach Donovan, just saying to himself, yo, if they give me a chance, like, you know what I'm saying, they would see, because I hadn't had any interest. The only team that invited me to camp was Atlanta. I hadn't had any interest at all. You know what I'm saying? So I really spent that whole summer working out and training with the Hawks. You know what I mean? And nobody really gave me a chance besides Atlanta. Atlanta had a spot. I played well. I thought they would give me that one spot, and they wanted to go with a veteran. The next year, I go overseas, I kill, I lose a lot of weight, man. I stayed on American time the whole time I was there.
So, I mean, that's interesting to say that. So it didn't work out. You know, you get your taste of NBA life with the Hawks. And then now you said that year go by. Where is your mental at that point? And then would say, you know what, I'm gonna go overseas and make this money too. Was it still that,
you man? Know, you know what? I remember it never to this day, and it ain't no disrespect. And he's Nate McMillan. When he was in Seattle, looked me in my face and told me to my face as a man, yo, second round for this pick. If you there, we taking you. And there's no grudge I held against Nate. You know what I'm saying? But he told me they would take me in the second round with a certain pick, and they went and took somebody else. They took Reggie Evans. Shout out to Reggie Evans, another Florida boy. You know what I'm saying? It's all love. You know what I'm saying? Reggie was one of the toughest competitors I ever competed against. You know what I'm saying? And I could see people looking at him, me and him, in the same, you know, category at that time. You know what I'm saying? Same size, you know, same kind of player and stuff like that. So, you know what I'm saying? That really, like, you know what I'm saying? When I seen, you know, Seattle pick go up and they took somebody else, you know what I'm saying? That was something. That was probably a fire inside of me that still burns today. You feel me? Like, just not about, you know what I'm saying, not getting drafted, but it was like, you know what I'm saying? And I didn't know the business then, but when somebody looked me in my face and tell me something, you know what I'm saying, looking in my eyes after the workout, yo, you had a great workout. You know, if you're here for this, this is what we're going to do. Okay, I'm thinking, yo. Yeah. Then you got a situation where you got people at the crib and you're expecting to get taken that pick. You know what I'm saying? And then it don't go like that. So when I got to Europe, dog, I gave myself one night to feel bad. I had a bottle of Hennessy and a box of Black & Miles, and I gave myself one pity party night, bro. One pity party night, and I ain't never felt sorry for myself since that night, bro. That was it. I just moved on.
Yeah, that Henny will make you or break you, and it made
one
you
night, bro. One night, I said to myself, man, this shit ain't right, dog. I ain't supposed to be here. These people don't lie to me. I'm gonna get all the ass.
So, from Florida to France over there, you know what I'm saying? Tell me about the support system you had, you know what I'm saying? Family, friends to help you, you know what I'm saying? Just cope with, like I said, new surroundings for you, you know, you're out the country, and also to keep you on your hopes high and keep you motivated to get back to the States and get to the league.
I mean, one thing about my family, bro, and you know this personally, we stick together. You know what I'm saying? No matter what, right or wrong, we take sides for each other, man. And you know what I'm saying? It was a situation where I had to go to Europe, and I didn't want to go by myself. So I asked my auntie to go with me. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, that's why my auntie,
what
my
up,
dog.
Auntie?
You know
what up, auntie?
That's my auntie, my dog, man. My auntie packed up, man, and she went to Europe and she took care of me, man. Feel me? So, my family, you know, I remember times where, you know what I'm saying, I had some girls tripping in high school and waiting on me on my car after a game. And my aunties and my sister was out there like, now y'all better get y'all ass from over here. I remember times when we was at the state championship, bro, and there's some people rumbling in the crowd, and I'm just like, yo, please don't let this just be my family, bro. As soon as the game over, it's my family up there tripping, bro. Like, we that family. You know what I'm saying? Right. We could be dead ass wrong, but we gonna stick together. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So we can be dead ass wrong, we gonna stick together, man. So like that's just what we are, man. So growing up down here, man, we just, everything was, we leaned on each other. You know what I'm saying? We knew we couldn't do it alone. You know what I'm saying? There was no way we was going to do none of this alone. You know what I'm saying? I had to be who I had to be, but it was no way I was going to be who I had to be without them. It was without my auntie, them taking care of me, providing for me, keeping my ass out of trouble, sometimes doing illegal shit to provide for me. Whatever they had to do to make sure I was straight, they did it.
Let's talk about your discipline, because, you know, if you talk about the transition from college, you know what I'm saying? You was a little chubby motherfucker. You know what I'm saying?
I ain't no little chubby. I'm fat.
I'm gonna say you're a little chubby, you know what I'm saying? But look, you go there, you go to France, whatever, and then you say you lost that weight. How did you stay disciplined enough to change your body and to drop that weight?
Man, I changed my eating habit first, you know what I'm saying? And thinking and just committed myself to working out. You know what I'm saying? It was nothing crazy. I gave up that pork. You know what I'm saying? I don't really eat that much beef. You know what I'm saying? Nope. You know what I'm saying? I very rarely eat beef. So it's mostly just chicken and fish. You know, I do have beef sometimes, but it's mostly just chicken and fish, man. And people don't understand, like, changing your eating habits is like a large portion of, you know, saying, like, really changing your body and your lifestyle. You know, people think you got to hit the gym and take steroids. That shit ain't it. Like, you got to first, before you start doing that, you got to start changing the way you eat and what you're putting in your body. And you'll see a change in the way you look just from that. And then you get to the workout process, man. So for me, I really started changing the way I eat. Not saying I was eating healthy, because all I lived on was sandwiches over there. Like, all I ate was fucking sandwiches and friends, bro. I was making sandwiches, and if I wanted to get gourmet with it, I grilled cheese that thing. Now, you know what I'm saying?
So gourmet was a grilled cheese.
Yeah, if I want to get gourmet with it, I'm going to grill cheese that thing. But I literally lived on sandwiches the whole time I was in France, bro.
Man, I know it's tough for you, but hey, them grilled cheeses, that gourmet sandwich.
Boy, let me tell you something. Them things got me through, dog. Like, it wasn't a day go by I ain't had a grilled cheese, bro. I promise you that.
Right. So over there, you hold the fort down over there in France. And then 2003, your home team, Miami Heat, come knocking at your door and give you opportunity. And they signed you, I think, was it 1 year first or 2 year first?
Yeah, it was 2 years, 4 points. 2 years, 1.1.
Back home and your home team, hometown, home team, everything, give you the opportunity. How did that feel?
At first, man, I thought I was going to San Antonio. You know what I'm saying? I had a hell of a summer league, you know what I'm saying, for the Miami Heat. And averaged a double-double, and then end up having a better summer league for San Antonio. Shout out to Stat Jack. I remember Stat Jack coming to check us out in Vegas, and Stat Jack watching me playing. Stat Jack, you know what I'm saying, looking at me like, yeah, we're gonna get you. You know what I'm saying? And San Antonio offered me a 1 year deal. And then after that, the Heat came back and offered me a 2 year deal. You know how this business go. You know what I'm saying? They ain't want me till somebody else wanted me. So McAdoo was out there, man, the great Bob McAdoo. Shout out to Dude. Dude was the one who called back to the Heat organization after watching me in Vegas at Senate play for San Antonio. I was like, yo, y'all got to sign this boy. Like, he going his way to San Antonio if y'all don't sign. So my first deal, I'll never forget it, man, was 2 years, 1.1. My first year was 400,000. My second year was 700. My first deal in France was 150.
Wow. That's a big difference right there. That's a big difference.
I went from 150 to 400 to 700.
Right.
Shit, you couldn't tell me I wasn't balling, boy. Boy.
Hey, did you finally cross the beach when that bank account changed?
When I got in the league, I crossed the bridge for sure. For sure. Definitely crossed the bridge for sure. You know the answer to that, boy.
I ain't want to assume none, but you know.
You know that.
Right. So now you back in, like I said, you back in the city. You know what I'm saying? So you said before, as far as college-wise, you knew you know what I'm saying, you couldn't handle probably, you know, just the pressures of your friends and stuff like that, being more disciplined. So now you come back. And so now you still got your friends, and now you got your family, and now you're in the league. How was that? Like, you cutting people off? How did you manage that? You know what I'm saying? Because, yeah. I mean, it happens to the guys that's able to make it. You got to cut some people off, or your circle that was big is smaller now. So how did you handle that? Yeah. And you better continue to handle that.
In your mind, man, you got this picture that, you know what I'm saying, like, everybody going to be down, and everybody going to be happy, and everybody going to last forever. And you feel like you can help some people. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, you're never going to be prepared for the pressures. And just, you know, sometimes being the one that has made it to, you know, the NBA or to professional heights in any situation, you know what I'm saying? It's always going to be it's always going to be tough, you know what I'm saying? And you got to have balance in that. And it's a gift and a curse in a lot of different situations, man. You know, thank God for the opportunities being home, because being home has allowed me to stay grounded with real friends and a real family. And it was easier to weed them fake ones out. You feel me? Like, when you're away and you know, you're playing for another team and you're in another city and you probably got, you know, four or five around you, you know what I'm saying? They all could be fake. You never know. But being home, you know what I'm saying? They couldn't hide here. It was easy to weed the fake ones out. You know what I'm saying? When you got your family here, you got your mama them here, you got your stepmama them here, you got your sisters them, you know what I'm saying? You know the real love and genuine love when you're around it and you feel it. So when you ain't around it and you don't feel it and there's some hate going on, you know that too. You know what I'm saying? But the hard part is getting to that point where you're mature enough to cut those relationships off. You know what I'm saying? Because it ain't easy, because we all feel a sense of entitlement because we grew up with these dudes and, you know, this, that, and the third, man. But every relationship ain't meant to last you forever. Some of them just phases in your life for you to learn from. You feel me? So a lot of them relationships with people that I had to learn from, man. Some things was learning what not to do. You know what I'm saying? Right. Some people made mistakes that cost them everything on a lot of different levels. So a lot of them things was just learning what not to do.
So you get to Miami Heat. Miami Heat, they have a draft. They draft Dwayne Wade. Now y'all in there together. And I know, you know, y'all have a great friendship now, and it pretty much started then. How was that transition of from your position being undrafted to D-Wade being, you know, highly drafted and coming in together?
I mean, we both came in, you know what I'm saying? I had came from Europe, but my homeboy Drake, you know what I'm saying? When he drafted Dwayne Wade, Drake, shout out Drake. Drake say, man, y'all got a killer. Drake said that boy had a triple-double on Kentucky. You know what I'm saying? I had been in Europe that year, so I had missed college basketball and everything up until that point. You know what I'm saying? I didn't really know much about what was going on, but once that draft happened, my boy Drake instantly started raving, you know what I'm saying, about D-Wade. You know what I'm saying? You know, we both came in, and the relationship started instantly just because when you think about our backgrounds, both of us came from different places, but our circumstances were similar. You know what I'm saying? We both came from drug addiction backgrounds with our parents. You know, we both were, you know, young parents and fathers had kids early at young ages. So it was a lot of different things we were dealing with. You know what I'm saying? He came down here and literally before you had all them crazy ass rules, I mean, before you had the rules where you could put times on practices, remember back then they ain't had no time to work ass and stuff. So literally, we became like brothers in arms, like you in the army, like we became brothers in arms. Like in the morning we was at the track, you know what I'm saying? As soon as we left the track, we was at the gym working out, going out hoop game. Soon as we went and got our individual hoop game workout in, we was in the weight room working out. Right after the weight room, we was over the way to Zoe Arena to hoop at Zoe's over town. Right after that, we go eat and chill. Then we was back in the gym shooting at night. And that was our whole summer, man. So through that, man, you grow a friendship, you grow a bond. And then through the success that we had, you grow a brotherhood that just lasts forever.
So with the Miami Heat now, 2004, you know, y'all get the big fella, Shaq. What is that dynamic? Knowing who Shaq is, you know, how he's dominated, you know, did his thing with the Lakers. Now he comes to Miami. What was your initial, you know what I'm saying, feelings about that? And where did you think the organization was going from there?
I mean, I was excited about it, man. Shaq was one of my, you know, obviously growing up, you know, watching basketball, you know, if you're a fan of the game of basketball, then, you know, Shaq was the most dominant player of his era. You know what I'm saying? So to have an opportunity to play with that player, that was exciting for me, first and foremost. But, you know, the second part of it is the expectations. Now you have expectations to win and not just win basketball games and win championships. So as soon as we signed Shaq, it was articles criticizing me as being a starting power forward next to Shaq, because they're saying, this is the dumbest shit ever. Shaq ain't never won a championship with a power forward taller than 6'9", I mean below 6'8", or some shit like that. So I'm saying to myself, so because I ain't 6'8", 6'9", that mean we ain't gonna win? So now you're saying Travis Knight and all these guys are better than me because they played with Shaq and he taller than me? I killed Travis Knight, man. So it's like, I'm looking at this shit like, this man ain't even got here yet. And they already looking for something to pick at. And it's me, obviously. Oh, he's too short to play next to Shaq. Okay, cool. Like, that's another thing, you know, just motivating me. But, you know, when Shaq came, the expectations was to win and to win championships.
First year, you know what I'm saying? Like, y'all play together, then things didn't go as planned. Now, you know, Riles make moves. Did you think you was part of the moves just because, you know, you heard the talk before? Did you think you was part of, you know, a transition of changes around there? Or did you pretty much, you was happy with everything and thought you was, you end up being good, but.
I was happy with everything. I ain't really, at that time I was too young and naive to even be involved in that, pay that no mind. You know what I'm saying? I was just happy to be in the league. I was just happy to be hooping. It wasn't until the trade had been made, you know what I'm saying, and I saw what happened that, you know what I'm saying, I was like, okay, like, I see what it is. Like, it's time to, like, you know what I'm saying, they looking to win now. But it wasn't until the trade was made, you know, until I said, okay, the expectations, once again, is to win now. You know what I'm saying? We brought Big Fella in and we took it to the Eastern Conference Finals. But at that time, what Detroit had rolling was somewhat dynasty-like, you know what I'm saying? Kept dominating the East and getting things done in the East like that. You know what I'm saying? We wasn't going to get it done with the roster that we had. So bringing in you, bringing in Jay Will, bringing in guys like that, impact players, you know what I'm saying, on both sides of the floor, I think that put us on the same level to compete with those guys. So once again, I understood these moves are being made to win and to win now.
So that speaking of that trade, so it was Jay Will, Twan, we got GP, then myself, you know, overhaul from everything. And then, you know what I'm saying, like cornerstones, you had you and D-Wade that's there. So now, you know, Rouse ain't playing. You know how Rouse can get, you know what I'm saying? So you come in and I got there too with Stan Van Gundy. So he come in and then it's that change. And that's one thing I remember too, Zoe, he was saying, hey, you know, it's all cool right now. You know, Stan, you know, he's doing, you know, what he's supposed to do for the most part. But y'all don't want that man upstairs talking about Riles to come downstairs. He came downstairs. Everybody was like, oh, shit. Then it was real. What was your experience with Stan and then Riles coming down? Like I said, you know, he watch everything, but now he's on that sideline.
I mean, it was weird, man, because I had love for Stan. I always will. You know what I'm saying? I didn't want to see Stan leave. I felt like, you know, we were partly responsible because we didn't start that season out, I think, the way people expected, you know, with what we had on that roster and what we brought in. You know, I think people expected us to get off to a better start. So, you know, when Stan had to step down and, you know, even though, you know, it was, you know, because I guess he wanted to spend more time with his family, I felt like if we would have done a little better and had a little more success early, you know, maybe we wouldn't have had that situation. But, you know, it turned out where we won the championship from it and, you know, everything, you know, kind of panned out, you know, better for everybody. You know what I'm saying? But at that time, I didn't want to see Stan go, but I didn't want to see Rob bring his ass down there neither. I got no trip.
Right.
Yeah, I ain't want none of that.
So it's crazy because I'm going to ask you this. So, you know, growing up in Miami and before Riles got there, he was in New York. And so, you know, style of play and, you know, his winning tradition, winning championships. Now he comes to Florida, he comes to the Heat. Do you remember how the city felt about that? About Riles coming here, you know what I'm saying? And then what he brought as far as, you know, his toughness and things like that, you know, just his whole aura of being Pat Riley. You know what I'm saying? How did the city or how did you remember how you felt about that?
Not a big deal.
It wasn't a big deal?
Not a big deal. Nah, growing up in Miami, man, and it was sad because, you know what I'm saying? Well, I'm happy. You know, I'm happy I had a chance to, you know, cultivate the basketball culture in Miami. You know, I'm happy I had a chance to bring the first championship in Miami and actually, you know, help create the fan base and mold the fan base of Miami basketball because nobody really paid attention. And I'm not saying that's because of me. Like I said, I helped. But, you know, when Pat came down and the signing and different things like that, there was not a crazy amount of buzz. You know, it was still about the Dolphins. It was still about the Hurricanes. You know what I'm saying? Right. It was still about that. You know what I'm saying? And that's always going to be a huge part of, you know, what we root for and what brings us together down here. But, you know, at that time, it wasn't really the Heat. At that time that people were really, you know, associating Miami with as far as on the sports platform.
Gotcha. So 2006, we win a championship together. What point of that season did you realize that it was an opportunity to win a championship and for you to bring a championship to your city?
Probably when we got to the finals. You know what I'm saying? Right. When we got to the finals that I realized, okay, it's a legit opportunity to win it. You know what I'm saying? Nobody expected us to win it. Shit, nobody expected me to do nothing. You know what I'm saying? Right. Nobody gave us a chance. So, I mean, shit, all we had to do was come out swinging. You know, in the first two games, we forgot to bob and weave. Yeah, we forgot to bob and weave.
We're just taking that off the blows.
Yeah, we went out swinging, but we forgot to play defense and protect our face at all times, protect ourselves at all times.
Right.
You know what I'm
right.
saying? And then we figured it out. We cracked the code. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, once we played, but the four games we won in a row, we kept swinging. But we just, once again, we protected ourselves a little better. And I think that's why you saw us win four games in a row is because it wasn't because we didn't have the talent or we didn't have the game plan. We just had to tweak a few things. You know what I'm saying? And once we tweaked a few things and we figured a few things out, we kept swinging, but, you know, we did it a little more strategically.
So how you remember going to, like I said, being in the finals, playing against Dirk, Garden Dirk, you know what I'm saying? Dallas had a great team at the time, but Garden Dirk, what was your mindset guarding him, you know what I'm saying, at the time where, you know, he was a power forward too, like, yo, and the man at that, but having the opportunity to put your hands on him, basically, at the end of the day?
I mean, for me, I had the best of both worlds because, you know, in the post, you know what I'm saying, I was such a great defender, but, you know, Dirk was unlike something we had ever seen, you know, setting screens on the perimeter and running off triple floppies on the baseline. You know what I'm saying? That was something that you had experienced. You know what I'm saying? I had never really experienced that. So I think we was really able to collab, you know, on a lot of different things, and able to, when we was able to guard him, like, you know what I'm saying? So when I was in situations where I had to chase him off floppies and different things like that, I was able to tap into what you were doing and see what you were doing. And then when you was in a situation where you had to guard him on the post, red in front of him and different things like that, you was able to tap into what I was doing. So I would have never been able to chase that man off no damn baseline floppies if it wasn't for you being a part of the equation. You know what I'm saying? I had never done that before. You know what I'm saying? He was ahead of his time. You know what I'm saying? That was nothing that I was doing. But at the same time, I had to guard a 7-footer in the post. And the way I was chopping that tree, you know what I'm saying, in front, maybe it was something that you could look at and say, okay, I see what we got here. And we was able to do that. And I started on him, and you came in and did your thing. But, you know what I'm saying, it was both of us really contributing to that process.
Was shooting our eye out, boy. That motherfucker jumping was up here.
Yeah, bro. I mean, it was crazy. With a contest. Right? Yeah, man, he was ahead of his time, man. People don't get a man that's just due, man. It was the toughest matchup for me. Like I said, when you got a hedge on a perimeter screen and chase somebody off a floppy, and he's 7 foot, and he got him up, and he got him up, and he got him up, like, cannon, bro. Right. That wasn't nothing I had ever witnessed or seen before. You know what I'm saying? Right. And if it wasn't for me seeing you do it and watch you do it and practice and different things like that, I would have been able to show him like that. It was damn sure wasn't nobody on our team doing it.
Hey, right.
Girl, big dude, girl.
Black dirt.
Big dude. Right.
Oh, man. So just think about it. You know, we won a championship, and I always say that, you know, how we did it, I guess it wasn't a traditional, conventional way. You know what I'm saying? That we went about it, we partied, we went out, we had meets on the road and things like that. Tell me your best, meeting or situations that you had during the season where you're just like, yo, we wilding, man. We might not win. We keep doing this shit.
Probably in Atlanta when motherfucker was drunk all up. Pat said, That's it.
Right.
In the huddle. That's it. Shit got to stop. Let's start handing out PUIs. Playing and practicing under the influence. This shit got to stop. Finding you motherfucker, 2,500. Motherfuckers in the huddle burping. It stinks like a brewery in there. I say, yeah, man, this shit is ridiculous. Even in my mind, I'm saying, yeah, this nuts. This is nuts.
Man, people don't realize, man, we're in Atlanta, man. It's a timeout, man. And Ryle's in there trying to drop a play and talking to us, and everybody leaned over rounds like this. So just think, we was out the night before, and that's all you smell. Like, when I thought about it, I said, yo, yeah, he probably was tired of that shit. Boy.
Bro, I'm saying, I remember in that huddle saying to myself, he absolutely right. This time he right. This is too much. This is too much. You can like this shit perfumating in the huddle. I can smell it. It's coming from me too. So if I can smell it on me and right. Next motherfucker, I mean, it's lit up in here. He was right, man. That was too much.
Oh yeah, ain't nothing in this cup. It's just water.
You see what I'm on? I gotta go see the man tonight. I don't want none of that.
All right. So from your first championship to your second championship with the big three, you got Bosh, D Wade, and LeBron. No, what was, you know, I guess you say the different teams, there's a different style of play, but at what point did, you know, for LeBron James and being there with LeBron, did you see like, yo, he's ready for this? And then, you know, that he'll actually have a run like he's been having, you know, over the course of what you say, 18 years or whatever.
I mean, I just seen how many years. I mean, it's times where in practice, you just stop the practice and be like, God damn, hold on, man. Did he just... You know what I'm saying? Did he do that? Like, he'll take over a practice. You know what I'm saying? Then when you see the time that he actually implements into his body and the process before he even steps on the basketball court, then you understand why he gets the results that he gets. You know what I'm saying? I was always in there working hard. You know what I'm saying? But then I had to implement working smart. You know what I'm saying? So you look at the working hard part that he has and the working smart part that he's implemented with all that. You know what I'm saying? Then you understand why his body's been able to endure what it's been able to endure. But you know, saying it's been times we in practice where he's taking over the whole practice, but I'm living proof of, you know what I'm saying? If you can handle, you know, LeBron coming to your team, then it works out for you and it can be successful. The problem is everybody can't handle it. When LeBron comes to your team, there's winning expectations instantly. You know what I'm saying? Ain't no waiting. Four or five years process. Ain't none of that. The pressure is on and the fire is on your ass, Jack. If they don't win, If y'all don't win, he ain't the one that's going to be out of there. It'll be you. So that's what a lot of people can't handle, is the pressure that comes with when he comes to your team and the pressure to win, and understanding that if y'all don't win, they're going to recycle your ass. He's going to still be here. You know what I'm saying? And that's what a lot of people can't handle, man. But for me, I loved it that, man, because it was a lot of times where, you know what I'm saying, just as much as I needed him, you know what I'm saying, he needed me, you know what I'm saying? And I appreciated those guys depending on me and putting their trust in me in those situations that catapulted us to where we are.
So you got all your rings with the Heat. Which one is means the most to you?
My first one. My first one is what means the most. It's always going to mean the most. You know what I'm saying? I gave it to my father. I don't even have it. You know what I'm saying? I don't want it. You know what I'm saying? That was just, you know what I'm saying, for when you was kicking me in my ass and I didn't understand. You know what I'm saying? And when you was telling me I got a kill and I had 25 and I was like, what is that? Like, quit kill and I just had 25. Like, all those times when shit just didn't make sense. When I got the ring, it made sense.
Talk about that parade in your city and the parties outside of that.
The party never stopped. The party never stopped, man. The parade, I mean, dude, when you talk, I mean, regardless of how hot it is or what's going on down here in Miami, man, that's just a feeling that nothing else matters. You just in that moment, you know what I'm saying? All the love, you know what I'm saying? To be from here, you know what I'm saying? To be able to bring a championship back to the city, you know what I'm saying? At that time, I had never called myself the Prince of the City, but at that time, I felt like it.
Well deserved. I mean, you brought one there, and then, like you said, you build yourself up, you build the whole community up, and then just like, I mean, like you said, right now, just the Heat life for sure. Listen, in 2012, you know, does that ring a bell that year?
2012.
Itself? Yeah. Yep.
It's 2021, Paul. That's 9 years ago.
Yeah, I just thought, you know, because that's when you took over, you know, the rebounding thing with, you took it from Alonzo Mourning as a Heat all-time leading rebounder.
Wow. That's crazy. You know what?
And that might have stuck up there, something like that.
I appreciate that. You know the crazy thing about that, bro? And I tell people this all the time, man, is like all the stuff that I've accomplished, and I got to do a better job of this, man, is that I spend more time looking forward and not really celebrating the things that I've accomplished, man. And I try to take more time, you know what I'm saying, to celebrate the things that I've accomplished and the amazing path that has been laid out for me, you know what I'm saying? But sometimes we get so focused out here, man, just grinding, man, because that's in our DNA, you know what I'm saying? And we don't really think about the success that we've had. And, you know, you just bringing that up, it just took me back, bro, because I really haven't really, you know, thought much about it. You know what I'm saying? I talk, you know what I'm saying, most of these guys about, you know, what they need to do to get to that point, not about what I did.
So yeah, 2012, man. That's when you passed Alonzo Mourning. That is Alonzo Mourning.
I remember that game. Was it Milwaukee Bucks? I think it was Milwaukee Bucks, bro.
Yep, became an all-time leading rebounder for the Miami Heat. Now, when you talk about, or people talk about, the Heat culture, what does that mean to you?
First of all, you're gonna be held accountable here. You know, which we all know in professional sports, you know what I'm saying, is like a foreign language, you know, accountability, you know what I'm saying? Nobody wants to be held accountable these days. Nobody wants to tell you, nobody wants to hear what they did wrong and correct it over and over and over until they get it right. They just want to be corrected one time, do it right, and as soon as they turn your head, they go back to doing it wrong. But right here, you know what I'm saying, we don't do that. You know what I'm saying? We're going to hold you accountable, and we're going to create those habits, and we're going to create championship habits, whether you like it or not. And it's not guaranteed that it's going to win. It's not guaranteed that that's going to win. You know what I'm saying? But we're going to create those championship habits here, bro, with the work ethic and with the way we approach this mentally, physically. You know what I'm saying? We ain't for everybody. You know what I'm saying? The way we approach the work days, we ain't for everybody. As crazy as we is mentally, you know what I'm saying? We ain't for everybody. You know what I'm saying? As competitive as we are, throwing shit and breaking shit around here, we ain't for everybody. We understand that. You know what I'm saying? But we didn't say it's everybody coaching. We said it's Heat coaching.
Right. So, Who did you look forward to playing against or competing against? Like, you just looking at your chops like, yo, I want a piece of him, or I just want to see what he like, you know what I'm saying? And like, I mean, people don't realize, like, as a power forward position, you had a nice jump shot. You was active in the offense, you know what I'm saying? And people just now, you know, you've been your great support system, you've been the OG of your team, but, you know, you was giving out buckets too and bullying motherfuckers as well too. But who did you look forward to going up against and playing against?
I mean, this wasn't a game type situation. This was just a situation where he got to prove it to me. It was Chris Bosh. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't a situation where I wanted to play against him in a game. But when we put together the Big Three team, you know what I'm saying? And this is why I tell people all the time, Chris Bosh never got his due. You know what I'm saying? I feel like for the role that he played on that team and the caliber of player that he really is, CB can fucking hoop, bro. CB can go. Right. You know what I'm saying? CB can go. You know what I'm saying? That jab is slow as hell, but he ain't trying to go fast. Right. He ain't trying to go fast. You know what I'm saying? He ain't trying to go fast. He gonna get you. He gonna get you play right where he wants you. Yeah, he gonna get you right where he wants you. So for me, when we put the Big Three together, you know what I'm saying? I had competed with D-Wade all my life. You know what I'm saying? We kind of knew what Bron was about. You know what I'm saying? I just wanted to see what CB was about. And it was like, okay, he here now. Let's see. Let's see. I know he averaged 20 over there in Toronto, but let's see. And he earned my respect, bro. You know what I'm saying? He earned my respect. And that was somebody, I wanted that competition, not from a standpoint where I didn't like him or disliked him. He here, he part of the Big Three. Is he legit? You know what I'm saying? CB stood up in that paint, man. CB can fucking hoop.
That's what's up, yeah. I mean, playing with Bron and the team that you have is always a sacrifice. And I just seen that being on the coaching side with being in Cleveland. Yeah. You know, you have Bron, you have Kyrie, you have K-Love. Well, somebody got to sacrifice some and somebody got to take the lesser role. And it ended up being, you know, Kevin Love for the most part. But he still was able to shine on different nights. You know what I'm saying? But when you look at it, you know, everybody was talking about Bron, of course, and then Kyrie. And so K-Love was pretty much the guy left out. So, yeah, so that's what, you know, that was the LeBron effect that he has on the team. When you have three studs on your team, somebody, you know, gonna have to take a lesser role.
I mean, for us, you know what I'm saying? It was crazy because, you know what I'm saying, whether the public thought like CB took a lesser role or how it looked on the outside, we always knew on the inside CB was probably one of the most, probably the most important piece. You know what I'm saying? The most important piece to us. You know what I'm saying? We understood that. You know what I'm saying? Maybe the world didn't understand that, but we understood that CB was probably the most important piece to us. You know what I'm saying? With the way Dwayne and Bron attack the floor, you need a big guy that can rebound and defend, but that can also space the floor. You know what I'm saying? So the way CB was shooting that ball, and when D-Wade and Bron wasn't playing, people don't know. Go check his stats when D-Wade and Bron was out. The boy giving you 30. He was getting us game. He was winning. We were winning games when D-Wade and Bron were out and CB would play. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, people don't give him his just due, man. CB could hoop, man. CB was a real winner. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't always, you know what I'm saying, Bron leading us in scoring or D-Wade leading us in scoring. You know, the great thing about it was I understand, like, you know what I'm saying, a lot of different teams might have had different dynamics, but our dynamic was CB could have been our leading scorer 4 or 5 games in a row sometimes. You know what I'm saying? He was that nice.
Right. Yeah. I hope everything's well. When I heard he talk about, you know, they were talking about him being able to come back or something like that, but I don't know if he's still trying, but you know what I'm saying? It's a fortunate health issue, you know, that took him away from the game, but he did play his role and did it well. You know what I'm saying? It helped y'all win games. You being an OG now, I said OG of the league, OG of the team and things like that. Who was your OG and who looked after you once you got in the league?
Oh man, I mean, before y'all came, man, it was Eddie Jones and Brian Grant. You know what I'm saying? Those are my OGs. Shout out
to Xavier Boy, Xavier Grant.
Yeah, shout out to Brian Grant, man. Shout out to Brian Grant. BG really took me up under his wing because we played the same position. We were both undersized. You know what I'm saying? So I really learned a lot from BG. You know what I'm saying? Obviously, Eddie Jones was a South Florida legend, you know what I'm saying, from Broward, but you know what I'm saying? We still claim him. You know what I'm saying? All it's all the same. You know what I'm saying? When we claim it hoopers because we ain't got too many down here. So, you know, that was them. And then the next phase and the next generation came in with you, you know what I'm saying, Shaq and GP, you know what I'm saying? And then y'all became my OGs, you feel me? And then, you know, pretty much after y'all generation left, you know what I'm saying, it became me to evolve into, you know, who I was going to be and what kind of leader I was going to be. You know what I'm saying? And that wasn't easy, you know what I'm saying, because you know, so for a long period of time, you're still thinking me. You know what I'm saying? I'm just going to lead by example. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to do my job. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, then you got to go through those nights where, you know, the politics play and then you ain't getting the minutes that you want and your time get cut, but you still got to figure out how to be a leader, how to be an OG, how can you get these dudes to follow you? You know, so all that evolution, man, brought me to where I am and who I am now.
Like I said, the last standing OG. Do you think that factor on teams is missing? Because I just see it as you have more of the young blind as well, and they don't really have a guy that's been there and been through those trenches and those wars to understand, one, what goes on in the NBA and how to prepare yourself to be a professional at the end of the day. So you taking that on, how has that been for the younger guys that you have now on this team? You talk about Bam, Tyler, and the guys that even just came through Miami and you were still there. You know what I'm saying? Like they had to stand in line too. You know what I'm saying? Get their shit together as well.
Man, you look at the track record of most of the guys that came through here, you know what I'm saying? And that they were, you know, kind of maybe straddling in the line or, you know, been on a couple of different teams and, you know, things didn't work out. You look at when they come here and you look at they got paid. They got their money. You know what I'm saying? You look at it. You look at them. You know what I'm saying? The Deion Waiters, the James Johnsons, the Tyler Johnsons, the Hassan Whitesides. You know, you look at all these guys where, you know what I'm saying, NBA teams were either sending them to the G League or, you know, wasn't giving them a chance, you know, undrafted, could have been out of the league, man. You know, these are my dogs, man. And when they came here, they fell in line and they saw what they were really capable of and they got paid and they got their money. You know what I'm saying? So that's what I call an OG. You know what I'm saying? That's like, you know what I'm saying? When you get guys to, you know, do what's best for them. You know what I'm saying? Not what's best for you. You know what I'm saying? It does me no good for these guys to come here and, you know, get in great shape and play great basketball and make their money and leave, because at the end of the day, they're still not a part of this organization anymore. And this is the organization I play for. But I think when you talk to these guys and you look around the league, they understand that, you know, my influence and, you know, what I feel for them and about them goes beyond the Miami Heat or any other organization. You know what I'm saying? Once Derrick Jones, you know what I'm saying, won the dunk contest competition last year. You know what I'm saying? I'm all my dogs, man. I still tap in with these dudes. I still send texts to see how they're doing, let them know they're doing well, man. But all these guys came here through adverse circumstances, through G League, through possibly being out of the league. And now you look at these dudes now, they all got $50 million contracts, $60 million contracts, $40 million contracts. Yeah, I ain't saying I did it, but they just listened to me. They listened to me. You know what I'm saying? If you listen to me, dog, I'm going to make sure you straight.
Right, right. So why is Jimmy Butler a good fit for the Miami Heat?
I mean, you put a dog in a kennel, he make a pack. You know, it's pretty simple to cut and dry with Jimmy.
Kennel and he makes a pack. Okay, I hear you.
Put a dog in a kennel, you make a pack, man. And he came down here and you understand how I am. You know what I'm saying? And I understand everybody ain't the type of dog that I am, but we got a couple of Frenchies. You know what I'm saying? We got a couple Yorkies. You know what I'm saying? We got some shit that might not bite, but it'll bark at your ass now. So you know what I'm saying? He's here. You know what I'm saying? And we about that. We about challenging somebody. We about, you know what I'm saying, confront somebody and holding somebody accountable. Not to the point where it get crazy or physical, but to the point where, you know what I'm saying, we're not gonna walk around whispering behind each other back. Now we gonna figure this right now. What's the problem? Because we need to win. We can't have this holding us back. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, he's that kind of guy. He's not a guy that, you know, he's not with the flow. You know what I'm saying? He's very transparent. You know, how he feel about you is what you're going to get from him. He's not going to act like he like you if you don't. You know what I'm saying? And this is the kind of place for that. We don't want you to like nobody you don't like. I don't care if you don't like him.
Right.
I'm with you. You on my team now. I like his ass.
Right. I don't like, hey, I feel you on that. Speaking about, you know, we talked about having a powerful voice amongst, you know, saying as being an OG. Like I said, we are great friends, and I see you from the Bray UD to the grown Taper UD now. But your voice, you know, it's been loud, and it was very loud during the social injustice moment that we had, you know, last year, and that we deal with, you know, every day. But you were out there front line. I seen it. Where did that come from? And did you ever think that you'll be actually a voice like that for your city and for the community?
No, I never thought about it, man. You know what I'm saying? You know, for me, I literally just saw everything that was going on around me. And was reaching out to some commissioners and some people in my city and just saying, how can I help? What can I do? How can I be involved? I want to do something. I'm sitting in the house. It's a pandemic. And I know I'm safe, but there's a lot of people out here that aren't safe. You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of people out here that are struggling, going through this, that, and the third. So what can I do? And my boy, you know, Commissioner Keon Hardiman just like, hey, you know, we're doing something in front of the police department this afternoon at a certain time. You can stop by if you got some time. And, you know, it went from me just stopping by to show support to me being on the stage speaking, you know, and I speak from both sides of the thing. You know what I'm saying? I got a sister that works in law enforcement. My auntie working in law enforcement. My cousin working in law enforcement. My uncle working in law enforcement. You know what I'm saying? So I got, you know, a line of people that work for the Miami-Dade Police Department. But I also got a lot of homeboys that's out here getting, you know, brutalized and racially profiled and, you know what I'm saying, this, that, and the third. So, you know what I'm saying, I understand both sides of this. And, you know, I don't have all answers, but I do know that just teeing off on the police and tearing up our own shit in our community ain't going to fix it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And it was more so me just speaking from that aspect. You know what I'm saying? I get it. We hot. I'm hot. You know what I'm saying? But we can't just go out here and act crazy because at the end of the day, they got more guns, they got more power. And we don't, like, that ain't, you're just running out here acting crazy in these streets ain't gonna win.
Right. Yeah. So, you was that soothing voice to calm the city down. And like I said, with your voice being that powerful at that moment, I know it spoke volumes, but you continue to do things in the community. Tell me a little bit about your foundation that you have. I was able to, you know, when I was there, able to, you know, be on some Christmas drives with you and things going on, feeding families and things like that down in Miami. Tell us a little bit about that and where does that stand right now?
I mean, we started the Udonis Allen Children Foundation, man, just because, you know, we had a family friend that passed away, had kids, and they were close to us. And, you know, we just wanted to take care of our kids, man, make sure they were straight. And then we went from taking care of their kids to taking care of the church, you know what I'm saying? And then it just grew, you know what I'm saying? And to the point where, you know, we do Christmas, we do Thanksgiving, we got a reading program. We do grandparents raising grandkids. We do backpacks. We do an honor roll program. We're just growing to that. You know what I'm saying? Then, you know, we attach it to, you know, the low income housing and affordable home aspect of things, all tied back to the community. You know, as we continue to reach out to, you know, the EV and the tech world, as far as everything being electric, you know, we tie all that back to the Udonis Allen Children Foundation as far as preparing our youth for the future.
Wow, that's what's up. That's big. I know during that process, you know, you got other big stars like Trick Daddy. I know y'all real good friends and the man Rick Ross. You know what I'm saying? I know y'all been collabing on some things and working together, you know, bringing that city and just bringing the whole, you say, the entrepreneurship, the vision to, you know, to the community there for everybody to see. How is it working with those guys? You know what, with Rick Ross and T Double, Trick Daddy.
Man, it's all love, man. I think, you know, from where we all came from to where we are now, you know what I'm saying? I think it's amazing. You know what I'm saying? I sit back and think about, you know what I'm saying, when Pitbull first started and when Ross first started and when Flo Rida first started, when I first was trying to be out here, you know what I'm saying, when Trick first started, you know what I'm saying, he was, you know, I think he was dancing. He was a dancer for Luke. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, we all started like from the bottom, bro. You know what I'm saying? I think Ross can't started rapping with Trick. He was like a hype man rapping with Trick or however it was, but we all started from the bottom, bro. You know what I'm saying? And I think it's amazing. You know what I'm saying? To see what we all at now, man. I think it's amazing. Every time I see a Trick commercial, you know what I'm saying, with his restaurant down here with Sundays, man, saying it's the number one restaurant in Miami, I'm excited about it, man. Every time I see, you know what I'm saying, Ross and, you know, what he's doing with Bel Air, you know, his champagne and, you know, all that, man, I'm just so excited to see what these boys doing, man. So it's been all love, man. It's just amazing from where we came from to where we at now.
Right. So speaking, you know, your first year with Trick Daddy, you know what I'm saying, I was down there and it was an experience of my life. You know what I'm talking about. You got me in the video.
On that video.
Man. On that video. You know,
in the video shoot.
I had a cameo in that. I was a damn video,
man,
I guess.
Man, back when we was young, man. So that was gold teeth video shoot, 7-8 hours.
Yo,
that was the days, man. I ain't doing that.
Yeah. And that was love because I remember, I mean, we was in training camp. You know, right after we won, we was in training camp.
We came.
Right, you said, hey, he hit you like, yo, what y'all doing? He said, y'all should come by here. We came by there. We just think we about to see what set life like, you know, for a video and everything.
Man, we was out there 8 hours. He was out there 8 hours, bro. It was all love, bro. He just hit me up and I just pulled up. But like you said, we was in camp. It wouldn't have been, I wouldn't have did nothing but for, like, it wouldn't have, I was, It wouldn't have been, if it wasn't love like that, like the homie, right. I wouldn't have did it, bro. But that's because, like I said, man, I just remember like where we all was. Like I used to be with Trick at Kappa Luau, bro. When I was in college, Kappa Luau in Tallahassee. You know what I'm saying? When I ain't had nothing, I remember Trick showing love. You know what I'm saying?
Right. So,
like I remember those days when we all, like I said, came from the bottom.
Right. So we know you tatted up, right? What's your favorite tat?
Oh man, my old girl, man. This one right here. Mm-hmm. Got my mama say my first love on it. You can't see it. Okay. Can't see it.
Yeah, I seen you a little see bit it. Of it. Yeah, see, show us the tattoo. Show the tattoo, man.
So this one right here. That's my wife. Mm. That's my second favorite.
Yeah. Yep.
That's my mama.
Okay.
And then I got all my kids, man. All my kids' birthdays. And I got the state of Florida on my back. And then I just got my pop's name, family first, 100% real. Mm-hmm. Everything that I either embody or you know stand for or that is important to me.
Right. And that's been, like I said, the people, they can't see it, but you got that state of Florida on your back right there. I mean, that's shit. Hey, that's a massive tattoo. That's a pretty plain much pain. How long did that take?
2 days, man. Shout out to my dog, Marquise Daniels. He got one too. Keese.
Oh yeah, what up, Keese? Yeah.
2 days, so. Bro. 2 days, bro. It took me 2 days, man. Keese had one first. And I was, because I was thinking about getting a Florida tattoo, but I didn't know I was going to put the damn thing on my whole back. He's went and tatted it on his whole damn back. So I hit him up. I said, boy, that thing that tight. I'm going to go ahead and get that. And I went and got it.
Okay. Man, listen, I'm not going to keep you too much longer, but at the end of the show, I have a segment called Free Game. What free game can you give me and the people out here that's going to hear this and see this?
Oh, man, shit. Educate yourself. If it's something that you want to know about anything, man, don't keep putting it off saying, yo, I'm going to get to it. I'm going to learn it. I'm going to figure it out, man. Educate yourself on something that you want to know, man. You know, I take time out here and learn different things all the time. You know what I'm saying? I think, you know, the thing we do is we just get comfortable every day just doing the same thing and following the same routine. And you just become a zombie, man, and the world pass your ass by. You got to evolve out here, man. Continue to educate yourself on new shit.
There you have a free game for my man UD, Udonis Haslem, Mr. 305, Mr. Dade County, Miami Heat lifer, Miami Heat all-time rebounder. My dog, you know, much appreciate love always.
And I appreciate get a hat, you, dog. Man. When I get my postcast hat, dog.
Hey, I didn't know you want one. I didn't know you want, but now that I know, I'll get you one. I'm a FedEx joint for you.
The first one, let me just say, the first one I did, you ain't had the postcast hats. You feel me?
Now you got the hats. Making a little progress.
You see how you do me? Now you got the hats. Just listen, you did my poll. You did mine with a KOD hat on the first time.
Don't tell them that.
Now you want to reshoot it with the postcast hat on. Get your ass out of here.
Hey, but guess what? Now, see, I wasn't going to go there, but you going to bring up the KOD, huh?
Man, my head say King. That's it, Black King.
Yeah, all right.
We all Black King. Power to the Black Kings out here.
Yeah, hey, we know where that's going, but we ain't even going to talk about KOD. But, man, appreciate it, man. Much love, man.
Love, homie. Love, my brother.
Yeah. I'll be seeing you soon, man. Holler at your boy.
This shit crazy out here, boy. We don't know what it's going to do out here, man. My wife was talking about planning her birthday trip. She don't know what the hell to do. The pandemic got everything fucked up, man. We just... Nigga just taking it day by day, bro. Tell you, we finna hit the road for a few days, and the road ain't even. Yeah, you can't go to no restaurants. Like, yeah.
It's crazy. You was talking about the testing. How is the testing now? You know what I'm saying? Coming back, and what are they doing as far as like the protocols? You know what I'm saying? What you got to deal with now?
On game days, you got to go in the morning, and then you test in the morning. You good to come back. On practice days, you got to test at least an hour before, and then you got to get a text message that say you cleared, then you can come in.
Damn.
So you got to sit in your car, bro.
Right. Until they tell you it's a go for you, and then you got to go play the game.
And yeah.
That's what we're dealing with right now.
But that's not on game day. On game day, you test in the morning, but you still got to sit in the car in the morning, too. So on game day, you got to test that, yeah. So if game day, you got to shoot around at 10. You got to be there early so you could test, wait that hour, and then go in. But you don't have to wait an hour in the afternoon. But if you ain't got no game and you just got practice, you got to wait an hour in the afternoon before practice. At some point, you're going to have to wait an hour before you walk in the building.
Right. Got you. All right, man. Stay strong. Keep doing your thing, man. Much love. Appreciate you.
For sure, my nigga.
And I'll be sending you love. One.
Yeah, postcast, man. Stop playing with me. Stop playing with me, dog.
Yo, this is James Posey. Thanks for checking out Posecast, brought to you by basketballnews.com. You can check out Posecast every Thursday on all your listening platforms.